It's been almost 100 days since the attack by Hamas and the declaration of war by Israel, and the humanitarian crisis in Gaza seems unprecedented. Dozens of thousands of people are dead and injured, a large amount among them are little children, 1.9 million Palestinians are displaced, the infrastructure is broken in multiple ways, and according to the World Food Programme Organization, more than 500,000 people are facing famine threat for the following 6 months at least, no matter what the outcome of the war might be. My name is Panagiotis Menegos, I'm the content and production manager of IMED Podcasts, and I reached out for answers on when and how this horrific situation will end to Petros Papakonstantinou, a journalist of Kathimerini and one of the most experienced analysts in international reporting and the Middle East in particular. Hello, Mr. Papakonstantinou. Happy New Year. Thank you very much for this conversation. I want to begin with, where are we at the moment? How would we briefly describe the current situation in Gaza? And if I'm allowed to ask, who's winning? And I'm putting the word in giant quotation marks.
Thank you for the invitation. My best wishes to you and to our audience for the new year. I wish it will be better than the previous one, which is not a long shot if one takes into account what we experienced in Greece and all over the world in 2020.
At least.
But you never know. So, what's the state of play in Gaza? We are already, during the fourth month of this atrocious war, from the humanitarian point of view, it's a total disaster. I mean, we already have 1,200 victims from the Israeli side, 23,000 victims at least from the Palestinian side. There are also 7,000 people, Palestinians, unaccounted for. Probably most of them will be already dead under the rubble of Gaza. You know very well that most of northern Gaza and big parts of central and south Gaza have been reduced to rubble because of the unrelenting Israeli bombardment. But there's no light at the end of the tunnel. That is, any peaceful resolution of the crisis and any idea of a permanent ceasefire seems to be lights of year away from us. Who is winning? It's very difficult to say. The Israelis claim that they have degraded or even dismantled the structure, the command structure of Hamas in northern Gaza. But they recognize that they face very difficult problems in the central and south Gaza. But even in the northern Gaza, the Israelis have not finished their job. And so the Israelis face a stronger resistance than they anticipated. They already count about 175 Israeli soldiers killed during those 3 months. And the Israeli press says that this number is, to a certain extent, underrated, because there are more. They don't say, just they don't. They have not recognized them. Anyway,
we'll talk about what's happening in Israel and about Netanyahu and the court decisions and what's happening internally in Israel. But I would like to ask first, how likely is an escalation? And if a Middle East regional war is possible? I mean, this discussion never stopped to exist since the 7th of October, but seems intensified after the killing of a Hamas leader in Beirut and the bombings in Iran that caused the death of at least 84 people. How likely is an escalation?
This is the $1 million or $1 billion question at the moment for everyone, and especially for the Americans. Who would not like, at any case, to see the war escalating. And I have the strong suspicion that Israel, I mean, Netanyahu government, at least, Netanyahu and his far-right ministers, Mr. Smotrich, Mr. Itamar Ben-Gvir, etc., that they want to finish their job not only in Gaza, but also in southern Lebanon with Hezbollah, which is an enemy for the Israeli state far more dangerous than Hamas is. I mean, their military capabilities are 1 to 10, at least.
Comparing to Hamas.
Hezbollah has the power to hit with precision missiles, not only with rudimentary rockets, etc. Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, Haifa, Nazareth, major Israeli cities. So they want a solution, a final solution, let's say, even in Lebanon, perhaps even with Iran, to settle accounts with Iran. And they want to drag the Americans in a major regional war, something that the Americans don't want to do. The Americans say that, okay, we will support you if you are attacked by Hezbollah. That was the meaning that they sent a U.S. Aircraft carrier there in the region, that I'll watch your back if you are attacked by the Lebanese, that is by Hezbollah, but not if you launch an attack against them. This is the message that the Americans are sending by now. But as you already mentioned, yes, the murder of Mr. Saleh Arouri, who was number two of Hamas political leadership in Beirut, and not just in Beirut, but in the suburb of southern Beirut, where Hezbollah headquarters are. This was a major provocation to Hezbollah. And frankly speaking, I'm astonished that Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, has been, let's say, very prudent till now, very restrained. He said that this cannot go unpunished, unanswered, this provocation. They already have barrage of rockets against Israel, but not hitting major Israeli cities. That is, the Israelis crossed the red line, but up to now, at least, Hezbollah's reaction has been restrained because Iran, which supports, of course, Hezbollah, does not dictate the decisions that Hezbollah will take, but has leveraged Hezbollah, undoubtedly. They wouldn't like to see a major war there, the Iranian, up to now. So I think that the risks for a regional war have been heightened, but it's not the most probable scenario up to now. Of course, there is the other problem with Houthis. The Houthi militia, which is not just a militia, of course. They control most of Yemen, even the capital Sana'a. All of this, the barrage of rockets by Houthis, the attacks against ships that are allegedly under Israeli interests, or what they try to do, that is blockade the Red Sea, and no ship comes to Israel. This harms also Egypt, of course, because Suez Canal is not used by many ship companies by now. They prefer to pay much more through Africa than cross the dangerous waters there. So this is a problem for the world economy, for Western governments who are in a very difficult uphill battle against inflation.
How much has it changed since the 7th of October, the stance and the language used by the West and the US in particular?
Yeah, a lot, I think. In terms of the public opinion and the peoples of the West, it has changed dramatically. I mean, in the first place, the West public opinion was squarely with Israel, and understandably so, because Israel suffered from heinous attacks from Hamas, unprovoked at that moment. Of course, there is the background of Israeli occupation so many years, but the scale of these attacks and the fact that not only Israeli soldiers...
The immediate emotional response by the people
of
the West.
Yes, it was very understandable. But then the picture changed dramatically because we had, of course, these attacks by Hamas, but what the disproportional the response of Israel created a humanitarian disaster. And not only this, we saw a war that is not just a war of Israel against Hamas, it's a war against the Palestinian people at large, a war against hospitals, against doctors, against the UNRWA, that is the United Nations Agency for the Palestinian Refugees, that have been killed. But more than 340 health workers doctors, paramedics, etc., have been slaughtered by the Israelis. All this changed the public opinion in the West, and we witnessed huge manifestations and demonstrations against Israel, even in countries like England, in London, for example. We had the demonstrations of about 300,000 people in London, which we had not witnessed since at least the Iraqi War 2003. When it comes to governments, well, Global South was, from the beginning of the war, in solidarity with the Palestinians, and this is quite understandable. It's the anti-imperialist, anti-occupation sentiment in the Global South. But in the European Union, you remember that in the first discussion in the UN Security Council, most European countries supported Israel and prevented any kind of resolution that would put pressure to the Israelis. In the last one, many European countries, including major ones like France, for example, Spain, Belgium, and other countries, voted for a UN security resolution calling for an immediate and permanent ceasefire, which was a major development. President Macron of France has changed dramatically during this period. But in the Americans, because the Americans is the only ones that have leverage to Israel. I mean, if the Americans wanted to stop the war, they could it in 2 or 3 days. Because they provide the weapons to Israelis, the financial they have come to the financial rescue of Israel, as a matter of fact, with the $14 billion that President Biden gave to them. The cost of the war, according to the Israeli Central Bank, will be about $58 billion. And for a country with a smaller population than Greece, you see, it's huge, man. And this is why they have begun withdrawing some forces from Gaza, because when you have 300,000 or more, 360,000 Israeli soldiers out of the productive machine of Israel, it is a huge financial cost. So the Americans could stop the war. Up to now, they have put, let's say, lip service only, but not a real pressure on the Israelis publicly. They say that in private, they are tougher with Netanyahu. What Mr. Blinken said during his last fourth tour in the region was not that we should have ceasefire now, but that Israel should step to the next stage of the war with more surgical strikes and less bombardments that kill innocent civilians, etc. The USS carrier Gerald Ford withdrew from East Mediterranean, and it was, I think, a signal to the Israelis that, you know, you don't have a blank check anymore from us. But up to now, the pressure is not that much that would oblige Netanyahu to change his course.
Is it important that we are that 2024 is an election year for the United
Very
States?
Very important, hugely important, because the Israeli lobby, as we know from the well-known book of Mr. Mersheimer, has tremendous power in the United States. The Muslims and the Arabs also have some power, especially in the states. Because their population is...
Elaborate on that, please, because it's an underestimated aspect.
It is. You know, their population in the United States is about half the Israeli one. And from the political point of view, okay, they don't have the same leverage in the media. For example, mm-hmm. New York Times is owned by an Israeli family, mm-hmm. American-Jewish family. Okay.
But they are gathered in their majority in the swing states.
Exactly, in the swing states. You have them in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, in those that will choose the next president. And the polls for President Biden are not encouraging at the moment. I mean, if President Trump manages to overcome the problems, the huge problems he has with the judiciary in the United States, then the polls say that they could probably win the elections. So Biden has to take into account the arms. His first reaction to the war was outrageous for the Arab population of the United States. I mean, he showed so much empathy for the Israeli victims of Hamas, okay, but no empathy at all for the much more Palestinian victims. He took at face value whatever the Israelis were saying about the war, about the bombing of hospitals, about the number of victims. He disputed the numbers of casualties that the Palestinians gave. It was not only Hamas that gave those numbers. It was also the Palestinian Authority of Mahmoud Abbas in Ramallah and the United Nations. And so, but as time runs against Israeli propaganda, he was obliged, President Biden, I mean, to change a little bit his public discourse and to have a more balanced position. But up to now, the American president is not enough to change Netanyahu's course.
Let's go back to Israel. How likely is it that Netanyahu will be unseated in 2024? And what would that mean for the future of war?
Yeah, I think it's the most probable scenario. Many people in Israel and abroad say that Netanyahu is a dead man walking. Politically, I mean. And it seems to be so. The latest poll I saw from an independent polls organization in Israel showed that only 15% of the Israeli citizens would like Netanyahu to stay in power. And the overwhelming majority of the population would like him to step aside and have a new government, probably with Benny Gantz or Yair Lapid, the two leaders of the centrist of opposition. The first of them, Benny Gantz, has entered the government of Netanyahu, but only in order to enforce the military campaign of Israel. He has not been an ally of Netanyahu. I mean, Gantz would like to replace him. And to my opinion, he is the most probable successor of Netanyahu. But he has also problems with the judiciary. My guess is that after especially what the Supreme Court of Israel, it was a slap at the face of Netanyahu. Because what does Netanyahu want? From the first day, he said that we have two objectives in this war. One, the release of the hostages, and two, the total elimination of Hamas. Where are we now? They have released one female hostage, one soldier of the Israeli army. Israelis, only one. There are 129 who are still under captives of Hamas. The Israeli army has killed three hostages because they were the soldiers under tremendous psychological stress at the moment. And Hamas is still around. And John Kirby, the national security person at the White House, told them that, you know, you cannot eliminate Hamas because Hamas is not only a military organization, it's also a political organization with deep roots in Palestinian society, and they are an idea. Which idea? The idea that you can only fight for independence and sovereignty and Palestinian states through the arms struggle, because diplomacy doesn't work and Israelis don't want a political solution. So Netanyahu, in a nutshell, has climbed too high the tree, that he cannot find his way back, and someone has to ground him, either the soft way or the hard way.
So to sum up, are there any plausible exit scenarios, in your opinion? How could a reshaped Middle East look like the next day?
Well, as a matter of fact, I think that the Middle East has already been reshaped. Of course, there were developments in the previous years, but they were catalyzed by this atrocious war. For example, the first year of the 2024, we saw Saudi Arabia and Iran joining BRICS. I mean, Brazil, Russia, China, India, South Africa, which was a huge blow from the political point of view for the United States. Because where were we on October 6th? I mean, the day before Hamas attacks. Biden administration, like Trump administration before him, was pushing for the implementation of Abraham Accords, that is the reconciliation between Arab states, major Arab states, and Israel, at the expense of the Palestinians, with no kind of political solution for the Palestinian problem, for the creation of the Palestinian state. And the major goal was for such an agreement to be held between Saudi Arabia and Israel. Now we have nothing like this, and on the contrary, because the American plan was to form between Arab states and Israel an anti-Iranian axis in the region. This is in ruins now. Saudi Arabia and Iran have come to a kind of compromise, let's say, in the reconciliation by the mediation of the Chinese, not the Americans. See, a major development in the region mediated not by the Americans, who were the boss in the region during the Cold War, but by the Chinese. This is one. A second is that the Palestinian issue has come to the top of the international agenda, which did not exist till October 7th. And either we like Hamas or not, I personally don't like their ideology and their methods, but anyway, the reality is that it's due to Hamas that the Palestinian issue has come to the top of the international agenda. And so the international community has to do something with it. What? The Americans talk about the two-state solution and about the necessity to create a Palestinian state with the Palestinian Authority of Mahmoud Abbas, both in Gaza and the West Bank. I don't think this is doable. First, because Netanyahu, unfortunately, has succeeded to undermine totally any credibility of the Palestinian Authority. Because he has made Hamas the heroes of the day because of their resistance to the eyes of the Palestinians and the global south as well. The West Bank seems totally...
he fed the radicalism, well, we can say.
Exactly, exactly. And the Israeli press accuses him that so many years he thought that he could buy out Hamas, letting the Qataris to fund them, so that he could say to the international community, we don't have a peace negotiator, who, because it's Hamas. And to have a sharp divide between the Hamas-controlled Gaza and the Fatah-controlled West Bank. So, but there is another, more essential question. What kind of Palestinian state could be created now? Gaza is in rubble. The West Bank, there are 700,000 Israeli settlers in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. To dismantle these settlements would mean for Israel, for any Israeli government, either a centrist or a left-wing one, would mean an Israeli civil war at this moment. So unless a miracle happens, or that the repercussions of this war are so huge for the Israeli society that changes its mentality, I cannot see any kind of two-state solution now. I would say that as things are developing up to now with this war, this conflict could be the last nail in the coffin of the two-state solution, and that the Palestinians and the Arabs at large will be obliged to switch to another strategy, advocated by some parts of the Palestinian society and the Palestinian elites, which is not to fight for a two-state solution, but to fight an anti-apartheid struggle for a binational democratic state, Israel's and Palestinians, with equal rights, including, of course, equal voting rights, which would be, normally, the worst nightmare for any Israeli leadership, because the Palestinians would be demographic majority, most probably, in such a binational state. So, if Israel faces the real threat of anti-apartheid struggle from the Palestinians, like what happened in South Africa under the leadership of ANC and then Nelson Mandela, only then, if we feel this threat that is imminent, only then they could perhaps agree to a two-state solution. But at this moment, it seems to be light years away.
Finally, what's your comment on the coverage of the war and the deaths of almost maybe 100 journalists on the field, in their majority Palestinians?
There are also four Israelis who died in this war. They are martyrs of our battle, because our battle is the battle for freedom against lies, against prejudices, etc.
Misinformation?
Misinformation, yeah. And they are not the only ones. I already mentioned also the other heroes of this war, who are the doctors, the paramedics, the UNRWA personnel, etc. The coverage of the war from the Western media, I mean, from the Al Jazeera, they had the Al Jazeera, I think, had the lion's share when it comes to casualties in our family of journalists. And they deserve every credit. Even Mr. Blinken, the US Foreign Secretary, had many warm words to say for Al Jazeera. It reminded me of the war in Iraq in 2003, when we used to say that everyone is watching CNN. CNN is watching Al Jazeera. And something like that happened with this war, because BBC or the other CNN, the other Western major, didn't have personnel there. The fragments of truth that we had to see was through Al Jazeera. The Western coverage of this war, at the first stages of the war, was that they were taking at face value whatever Israel was saying. And they had almost no empathy for the Palestinian victims, etc. But it changed up to now. Now the major danger is from the opposite side, that we will watch what happens in Gaza just for 30 seconds before the meteo, the weather news.
Yeah, there is this trivialization of atrocity.
Yeah. Yes, this
Gaza fatigue,
Gaza fatigue, let's say, or yes.
Same what happened with the Ukraine fatigue.
Yes, exactly. But there is also another aspect, I think, should say, that is that in the Western media and even in Greece, of course, we had in Greece and in other countries very nasty phenomenon, like journalists embedded with the Israeli army and glorifying them, even when they were dancing, celebrating the deaths of Palestinian civilians, which was disgusting for the journalistic family. But there is another aspect, that is, most times when we talk about Palestinians, we have two roles for them. Either they are terrorists, if they are Hamas or fighters, or they are innocent victims. Of course there are terrorists, and there are many more innocent victims.
Thank you very much, Mr. Papastathinou. It was insightful, as always. Thank you very much for your answers and the nice conversation we had.
My pleasure.
Mixed and sound design by Aris Athanasopoulos. Produced by Panagiotis Menegos. You can listen to more podcasts by visiting podcast.imed.org.